All right, welcome to our second podcast on the life transitions. Obviously, based off of that first one, change. We hate it, we fear it, we don't even want to talk about it. I don't like spelling it. This here is focused on, as we call, grace-filled sessions around emptiness, grandparenting, and elder care. That sentence alone sounds old.
I love the term elder care because it just sounds like a nice way to say take
you're
care
old,
of
TJ.
The old people.
You old, T.
Retirement home.
Yeah, this section here, obviously the first podcast was college to career. Mm. It was first time or married, and then children. This is the next section of life, which we all are moving toward.
Trying to recall, at Party City, they have those joke candles for birthday parties of it's like over the hill, these little candles with tombstones on it. I want to say it's like, I guess it'd be 40 because that's like the midlife kind of thing.
Right.
So it's over the hill, which is.
Don't you know 55 is the new 19? Hello.
Shoot. I mean, almost 30 now, which is strange to say. But.
All right. Well, the first segment is around navigating the empty nest and rediscovering purpose. So,
which ties in with people graduating during this time frame. So we're now talking to your parents in case you listened to the first one.
Exactly. So if you have some college kids that are getting ready to graduate, what's going to happen is they're going to put on this cap and gown. Mm. You're going to sit through this 3 hours of strange names, then yours.
To hear it for 2 seconds.
Right. And they're going to be going to grab their cap, and they're going to throw their cap into the air with elation, happiness, and excitement on their face. And when that cap comes down, responsibility, fear, and trembling lands. Like, what did I do? I did not want to be an adult. So for the parents of these children, you're now experiencing empty nest. And what's funny is that when we were first starting to develop this around you, when you were left, Noah left first. He got married when he was like 4 years old. Then you stayed. Noah got married at like 19, him and Kenzie. Noah, if you're listening, there's your 15 minutes of fame right there. They got married very young. And you guys got married, you were 23 kind of thing. So when you moved out, we had been preparing for empty nest for a while, but obviously preparing for war and being at war is different. Mm-hmm. So mom, was like, still, that was very challenging, but there wasn't a whole lot of content out there around empty nest. And so we wrote a devotion. We wrote, an original around that and tried to convey what we were going through, what we should be doing, what can be doing, that kind of thing. So for many parents, the transition to an empty nest can bring feelings of loneliness and purposelessness. There's a sale on S's on that word. And how can faith renew the sense of purpose in that season? Here's the challenge. If, as a parent, you have handcuffed yourself to your children and neglected your spouse, you about to pay a bill that is overdue. Because once that child moves out, you're going to be facing a stranger that you've ignored for years.
Yeah.
And that is probably both of your fault. It's not just one or the other. Like if you're just focused too much on your children, this other spouse should be saying, look, why don't we invest in ourselves too? Because so-and-so is going to move out eventually, Well, he's 47. I get it. Eventually he's going to leave, thankfully. And so, but if you have misprioritized your children in your life, there's going to be problems in this area.
Yeah.
And I know grandparents that have done this. And look, I adore you and Noah. I mean, I love you guys. But there is a bit of a pecking order that God has instituted. And, you should cleave to each other, right?
Yeah.
From your parents. And so I think this section is very challenging for my age group. The empty nest syndrome affects over, and this number seems low. Every time we read a stat, yeah, we're always like, that stat seems wrong. The empty nest syndrome affects over 22.5 million families and leads to, obviously, many emotions, including loss and freedom. And that came from Picasso.com. Not the painter.
Okay, I'm guessing it's an alliteration for something.
Yes, I don't know what it was, but it was on a website called Picasso.com.
I'm sure it's like parenting or something like that.
Something like that, yeah. Acronym, I guess. But I think that one of the challenges that people have is that they don't know what to do now that their normal routine is changed. This is not something that's going to change for a little bit and come back.
Right.
This is, they're moving out for good.
Right. Well, I think this is a good reflection of this is, like, say, if your child maybe moved to a different state, different area to go to college, how did you handle that during that time frame? Kind of like a trial run, right? Sure. And if you look back on that time frame and it was, like, terrible, just imagine that, but there's no coming home for spring break or summer kind of thing. So, oof, you know, that's some warning bells for you. But I do it's interesting to see, you know, there's always like family dynamics and how that plays out where you hear many of stories where maybe one of the children has become the emotional support for one parent or, you know, maybe one part of that, you know, marriage has become distant or, you know, does not fulfill that love language anymore and they seek it elsewhere. And then the child becomes words of affirmation or whatever kind of thing. And that gets taken. And the kicking and screaming that happens. And I can say that from seeing other people experience them getting married and then them cleaving to each other, being taken. They're not being taken. They're just creating their own family. I got to watch my words.
You've kidnapped my child.
Just if when that happens, because even Heather and I have experienced this from her parents' perspective of they viewed me as almost like an invader in the beginning of, you know, I took their daughter from her. And because
every man goes through that. You have stolen my daughter.
Yes. But she played a role in that family dynamic of a little bit of that emotional support system for her parents. And because that was taken away from them, because she was, you know, moving in with me at that point after we got married, the hostility was heavy against us, but also towards each other. Because they're like, well, now that I don't have someone else to kind of help me, I'm upset with you because now I realize that you were supposed to be fulfilling that for me.
Right.
And now I'm angry at you. And, you know, that coupled with maybe not maturing during that situation or hobbies are a wonderful thing. That if your hobbies have only been kids for the last, you know, 30 years and you don't have any of you left over once the kid leaves and you're a shell of a person, that makes it really hard because then you're just sitting there in your emotions of, well, now I'm just upset because there's no more football games I get to take my son to or no more ballet recitals for piano, whatever. So there's a lot of rediscovery in this time frame, and you can look at it one of two ways. Either you can go kicking and screaming into the night and be upset and really damage your relationship with your child, or you can say, hey, maybe I can actually, you know, experience some new things in this new stage of life with my spouse that maybe we haven't had time to connect over the last couple of years because of all the insanity. And we get to, and you know, the whole thing of marriage is to never stop dating each other, right?
Bingo.
And if you you've done that, please don't do that. But if you have, if it's fallen to the wayside with kids, this is that time to re-engage in that activity.
Right. You will have a season when you cannot afford to go out. You know, just be like the house and the kids, use up all the money and, you know, whatever. You can still find time for yourselves in some fashion.
Yeah.
All we're saying is like about an hour a week. But with the empty nest, now all of a sudden you have all this time. Mm-hmm. You just don't have any things in common anymore.
Right.
And it's these two strangers and they're like, hey, what do you want to do? Let's call the kids, you know, kind of thing. So start dating your wife immediately once a week, take your wife out to dinner, some shopping, music, a movie, whatever, dessert. Find some things to do. Start rediscovering your relationship, because the years that you're going to put in from this point on will be joyful if you do that, and it will be very frustrating if you don't.
Right.
And you will start to lean on your children and become a burden to them. And I'm being honest. You will become a burden to them because you are then still requiring them to be what your spouse should be.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to be brutally honest in this section because, you know, it's one of those things that we've always dated. Dana and I've always dated kind of thing. And so even we felt a little bit of that separation. You're going to feel that. I mean, that's just normal. Mm. It's the preparation you put in the continuation that you make is going to have a direct impact on from age, say, 50 to 80 or 90.
Yeah.
You can make it miserable or you can make it like a second honeymoon kind of thing.
Right.
And so I think it probably takes people a couple of years. It took Mom and I about 3 or 4 weeks, maybe 6 weeks, to find our legs under us with just her and I.
Yeah.
And now we're like, 4 years into Empty Nest, we're like, we're pros at this.
Yeah.
You know, and so that gives us the ability to enjoy the time with you and Heather, or you, Noah and Kinsey and the grandbabies, soon to be grandbabies on the other side, hopefully. But, and then we're able to enjoy each other's company, because that is going to be the bulk of our time together.
Right.
And so I'm going to give you, in this segment here, I'm going to give you a book that I just read. And it's a fantastic book. It's one about Empty Nest. It's Doing Life with Your Adult Children. And the tagline is Keeping the Welcome Mat Out and Your Mouth Shut.
Hmm.
And I read it, and it was so good. I told Mom to read it, and she loved it. We've already recommended it to a couple of couples in our small group who, one lady, their oldest daughter, just got married, and it's been a week since she moved out. And the mom was like, he's gone. And, we were like, hey, let me catch you early. Read this book.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've already bought it. They started reading it. And so we'll put that link in the notes below. But and I don't have the author's name, but I listened to the audiobook.
Yeah.
So Doing Life with Your Adult Children is the title of the book.
Yeah.
So there's not much out there. You would think there'd be much, much more, because the boomers have always impacted industries as they've moved through time, because they're just a large group.
Yeah.
And you would think that they would have impacted that segment when they passed through it, because now they're in that, older years. But you would think that would, like, man, let's just develop some things, some books and whatever on it. There's really not a whole lot out there.
Yeah. I think it falls in line with a lot of, like, generational verbiage, right? Like, that generation doesn't really enjoy the self-reflection and a lot of, like, buzzwords bound down emotion or growth. I don't think that many of the books that I found most helpful for me as a person have come out in the past probably, like, a decade or so.
Mm.
And I think it's also identity, right? Like, I mean, if you find your identity as this thing, like, I am a dad and that's all I know, then you're not going to look outside of that, and that's going to really impact how you view yourself as soon as the kids leave. It's odd that there's not more out there, but this is the horror stories that some kids have gone through, and then, around your age, that with a half-parent boomers, they just go, well, I'm old, and you're going to take care of me now. So I hope you have an extra room for me, kind of thing.
That'll be in our third segment. So we'll get to that. So our verse on this one here is Ecclesiastes 3:1.
For everything there is a season and time for every matter under the heaven.
Some seasons are worse than others. Again, we want to mention our membership options of monthly, annual, and lifetime. If you are looking for some content like this, this is the kind of content we develop for our members.
Yeah.
It's not for the generic content we have out there, like our articles and our devotions kind of thing. This is the kind of content you get when you become a member.
Yeah.
So be sure to check out that on uncommon.org and listen to a couple of awesome sponsors that support us financially. Uncommon would like to thank today's sponsor.
At Sterling Technology Solutions, our mission is to help businesses in North Carolina maximize their profitability and success through our innovative managed IT services.
All right, welcome back to segment two of this Life Transitions. This one is about grandparenting, leaving a legacy and faith. So one of the things that scares me to death, it's not growing old. It's getting to a point where someone looks at me and says, I can't quite depend upon TJ to do anything anymore because it just feels like he doesn't have grasp of anything anymore. And that scares me in the sense of, I'm going to be able to think. I want to stay sharp. I want to stay active. I want to stay that a driving force in the family kind of thing as long as possible. And so as grandparents, we're kind of given the unique opportunity to influence another generation or two.
Yeah.
And so how can we impart our faith and values effectively? Now, I see families who they have not great parents. And they have not great kids. At least they're not great grandkids.
Yeah.
You see the same issues throughout the family. And so I imagine that's a pretty common thing. And so, grandparents play a crucial role in their grandchildren's life and like a spiritual formation or offering wisdom, support, kind of faith, encouragement kind of thing. But there is a small window. I think I saw the stat. It starts around 10 years old. Kids start to kind of like gravitate away. In their teens, they're not thinking of grandparents anymore. oh man, I'm going to go hang out with my grandma. Now, I hung out and did things young. And then my nana passed away. And I was like maybe late teens, early 20s. And then my grandmother was more closer to my 30s. And so I got a chance to spend a little more time with her in the later years as well. But even girls compared to guys don't really kind of hang out with the grandparents as much as maybe the granddaughters do kind of thing. And so that window is short, and I think it's important for a grandparent to realize their job's not done.
Yeah.
Taking naps on the sofa and that kind of stuff. Hey, man, look, even Jesus took naps. he napped in the back of that boat quickly. But we still have some work to do on many different levels. But leaving a legacy is a good thing, too. And so, we own our own business, and I feel that's a legacy that we've left in the family that hopefully that continues on for, years and decades to come.
Right.
But, the responsibility, I can see that older generation, that either they had checked out and said, that's not my job anymore. That's my kids' kids. And there's a bit of that too. This is kind of like playing with a dog at the puppy place and then mm-hmm. leaving, right? There is that, but there are times when I'm with my granddaughters or grandson and want to have a somewhat serious conversation or yeah. answer a question that helps guide them. And so when we were walking years ago, Hopper was talking about, you know, wanting to give me a Bible. So, baby, I said, I already have one. I said, but I would love for you to give me a Bible. That'd be fantastic. And she's like, oh, you have a Bible? You know, I said, yeah, I read my Bible every day, you know, kind of thing, and pray. And so it was funny. It's a great moment to speak to her about that, because if you do that early and continually, I think you'll benefit and they'll benefit from that as you get older. Mm. Whereas if they continue to walk in your faith and you don't, or vice versa, there'll be this disconnect.
Yeah.
And because they're going to go through those teenage years and those early 20s, that peer pressure and the culture is going to pull at them to step away from the family and their faith. Mm-hmm. And so it's important for us while we can to invest in that. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's interesting to see the effect that someone has on even a small child that isn't exactly a parent, a grandparent, even, you know, from my perspective as an uncle to the kids, making sure that they're getting information that is, you know, biblical and faith-driven from multiple different sources, so that it's not just coming from parents, because while parents are the number one source of information, sometimes the same information coming from a different source can have more weight to it.
Oh, sure. We purposefully did not do Santa with you guys because, one, you could see Santa in the stores, right? And from a young child, they're like, you know, I could see Santa. And all of a sudden we tell you at some point, well, Santa's not real. So what do you say? Santa's not real? I could see him at the mall.
Yeah.
He brings me presents. And then we have to tell them a person that they can't see, Jesus, is real. Mm-hmm. And there was a bit of a complex kind of area there that we knew we could probably navigate that by not playing up Santa too much, mm-hmm. still having Jesus as a focal point. But those around you guys and our family or friends may not be believers.
Yeah.
And they would not make that switch to go from, yeah, Santa's not real, baby. The real meaning of Christmas is about Christ. Mm-hmm. They would not do that. And so we felt that, you know, we're just not going to muddy the water. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you knew about Santa. We just didn't focus on that.
Yeah.
And I don't think it stunted you guys at all. We're like, well, I mean, we still get gifts, and I love Christmas and that kind of thing there. And so everybody approaches it differently. But what made us take a stance on it is that when you have unbelievers that once you make Santa, you know, like, well, it's not real anymore, they're like, well, well.
Yeah.
There goes that. And for us, that was not good enough.
Yeah.
And so I think investing in your grandchildren in biblical ways will pay off for them eternally, but as well as for their parents too.
Yeah.
So our verse this week, or this segment, is Proverbs 17:6.
Grandchildren are the crown of the age, and the glory of children is their fathers.
And we have the grandbabies and the family coming over tonight, so I'll get a chance to see my babies. And so we have two granddaughters and a grandson. So that's always fun. They are active, to say the least. The best part about being a grandparent, after how cute the kids are and spending time with them, is when they leave, we can then sit on the sofa or whatever and go, oh, my goodness. Did the kids have that much energy when they were young? Mm. So as far as a devotion, we have our empty nest as well as a legacy devotion that we have on. And so I think that's a great piece. We mentioned this in the last segment, but I'll do it again here, is a book called Doing Life with Your Adult Children, Keeping Your Mouth Shut and the Welcome Mat Out. Mm. And so I think it's a great resource for a grandparent to invest in to get the most out of these years.
Yeah.
Because your legacy will go as far as you invest in that. Mm-hmm. I think if you come across as this out of touch, absent-minded, kind of smelly goofball that just sits on the sofa and yells at the TV and, you know, is described as just stuck in their ways,
yeah,
I think that your grandchildren are going to quickly see that and disconnect.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's important for us to stay involved in their lives.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't need to be that you're saying the slang that they're saying these days or whatever, but I do think there's a huge difference in how you connect with the grandchildren. Because I remember from my perspective being very, very young, it was hard to connect with my grandparents just because of the age difference, and I didn't appreciate that until I was much older and able to understand that connection and, sure, you know, have more maturity. So, you know, whether that's, you know, you showing interest in their hobbies or, you know, getting down on the play mat and playing with the blocks, you know, it's that kind of stuff that kind of embeds the relationship you have with your grandkids that can help foster closer relationships and faith-based conversations later down the road.
Yeah, we take in the girls' love when I color with them. And I say color, but it's really never me, actually, my crayon ever touching the page. So they'll get on my lap, one on each leg, and they'll ask me to color a section. But as soon as I start coloring, they want to color that section. And so I just kind of move around a little bit, or they ask me to draw them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they become my world's biggest critic. That doesn't look like me.
So then Do you know what you look like?
So then I purposely like draw their ears big or whatever, give them a mustache. So that's always fun. So our verse in this section obviously was the Proverbs 17:6. Children's children are the crown of old men. Old man. I'm not quite sure I'm down with that, but, you know, and the glory of children are their fathers. So I would recommend spending some time in prayer and in the Bible in this section of being a grandparent and leaving a legacy and finding out what that legacy is.
Yeah.
So stay tuned for some upcoming sponsors as we close out this section in our next segment.
Uncommon would like to thank today's sponsor. Cole & Company looks to impact the lives of all they touch so they can discover their greatest potential. They seek to coach clients to clarity and reach their version of success. Visit them at cole-cpa.com.
Okay, we're entering our last segment of Life Transitions, and this one is Honoring Our Parents, the Call to Care.
Mm.
Elder care, as the last segment of this podcast said, you know, we have friends that are in our age group, in those 50s, that they're taking care of their parents.
Mm-hmm.
And we are doing the same thing with Dana's mom. And there's challenges on both sides with that, right?
Yeah.
Health care, or health rather, time, availability, I mean, emotional requirements. I mean, it is a drain on, I'm sure, both sides.
Yeah.
And it makes for a challenging time for, I would think, our parents as well as us.
Yeah.
And so we had a friend that the dad just passed away. He was having some health issues, and he was taking care of the wife who has dementia.
Mm.
And so when he passed away, usually that person is such a struggle, especially when they have dementia, and because things change too much. And just seeing them go through that, they've had to like leave their house and go stay with the parents in a different, you know, city. And so it's been very, very challenging. And so as we see more people our age dealing with an aging parent, it makes us like, okay, well, what are we doing to take care of ourselves so that we don't just fall on our kids like a ton of bricks? Mm. We're going to get old and older, and there's nothing we can do about that. But no. I do think I see that, just like we talked about in the empty nest section, that we could help our kids out by doing everything we can from an emotional standpoint, mm-hmm. And a spiritual standpoint, because we could see that the parent is probably scared. Maybe the end is coming near. Health's failing. They're afraid. They're starting to lose some of their faculties, kind of thing. And so, you know, the Bible emphasizes caring for the elderly, recognizes that as an act of love and respect. And so, and I was doing some research on the stat here. It was staggering, but when I thought about it, I'm like, yeah, that feels about right. So family caregivers spend an average of 24.4 hours a week providing care.
Wow.
Nearly one in four caregivers spends 41 hours or more per week providing care, and that's from caregiver.org. That's a full-time job, in case anybody's wondering out there.
Yeah, I mean, usually if you want an in, this is like having an in-house nanny almost, essentially, but with like nursing abilities in case you need medical stuff. So yeah, I mean, it's why retirement homes probably have skyrocketed in price, just because of that level of care is much more than, say, just a caregiver that comes to your house to kind of help clean or cook meals kind of thing. So
yeah,
I mean, that sounds about right. And this is, you know, some of the concerns that, you know, some people are having who are in that stage of life where they're like, you know, well, hey, my retirement can't afford a caregiver, maybe, or a retirement home. And so, like, now it's not like a choice of, do I want to have to go live with my kids? It's like, I have to. And, you know, what that looks like in that stage of life can be vastly different than, you know, just someone who's like, you know, hey, I want to be close to my family. So I think in any situation where choice is removed from that, and it's a, you know, you have to do that thing, it can be very scary.
Oh, sure. You start losing your independence. Like, mm-hmm. You get the keys up to the car.
Yeah.
You have to be taken everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, that's a season of life that is challenging. So when Mom and I prepared for the empty nest section, we may not have prepared enough for this section. Mm. We thought we had done that. We had talked through it for a number of years, prayed about it, tried to think through some of the solutions and, you know, what the, in a reality kind of thing. But as with most of these things we talk about, until you go through it, you don't quite know, because everything's different. You're like, I'm going to do this. We're going to play. It doesn't quite go that way sometimes. Yeah. And so those friends, you know, that the woman, the wife, had to quit work because you hit that number of 40 hours a week. You know, the husband had to change or transfer locations of his business that he worked at. Fortunately, they let him do that.
Yeah.
And so basically they're living, say, in Raleigh instead of here for a while. And so, you know, taking your parent to doctor visits and grocery shopping and that kind of stuff there, when it's shared around the family, it's a little bit easier. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it falls on one or two people, and holy cow, it is sometimes just an unexpected necessity that it lasts a while. And so currently going through that, I could say that if you are not going through that, start preparing for that. Mm-hmm. Even just having conversations with your wife about that transition, because that's sometimes out of your control.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be a short window. It may be a 10-year window. And so some very hard decisions come out of that section. When mom's dad passed away a couple of years back, they had me handle the funeral, all the details of that, because everybody else was just, you know, kind of really emotional about it. And you get to see that those latter years of life have big impact. And so I could say that if you're in this window, if you have not done some estate planning to help your children out in the future, might be a good time to do so.
Yeah.
Look into some what a funeral costs, some of those details, so that your children don't have to deal with that, because this is going to be challenging enough on their own.
Mm-hmm.
So what a bummer end of a segment. So our verse in the second is 1 Timothy 5:8. But if any provide not for his own, and especially for those of his own house, he have denied the faith and is worse than an infidel.
Mm.
So as you can see that we're called to take care of
yes.
widows and orphans mm-hmm. and our parents and that kind of thing. So I think we should spend the time and effort in learning what is needed and be praying about that, because that could come sometimes much faster and much out of the blue than you expect.
Yeah.
So as we end this segment or end this podcast, we want to just encourage you to go back and listen to the first one. We went through college and marriage and children, and this one was around empty nest and grandparenting, as well as taking care of our parents. So we felt that that was a good range, even though some of them were kind of bummers toward the end there. But death is inevitable. We all do it. And if you are a believer, then your last breath here is the first breath with Christ.
Mm.
So let's see. Our conclusion is we want to encourage you guys to engage with Uncommon, whether it be on podcast or social, on our website at uncommon.org. We'll be doing 2 podcasts a month. And so this one will come out in May. And so if you have any suggestions about upcoming episodes or want to comment about any of these, please do so in the comments below. So Joshua, hit them with our statement.
If you're going to be something, you better be uncommon.
Amen. I think those last two would go a little bit quicker.
Yeah.